Hello, I'm Kristen Jerome. This is number 0129, the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File Program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File Program, number 0129. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File Program, actress Tanya Lee Williams, who plays Dr. Olivia Winters on The Young and the Restless. Do the accolades that the film The Help is getting this year push roles for women of color a little bit forward?
I think if you're black, it's hard to get excited about the many, many stories that keep getting recognition are usually stories about people being slaves or people being domestics. Those are usually 99% of the movies that the rest of the world gets excited about. I think it just seems like a broken record to us. Well, especially if you're a person who's black, you know there's so many amazing stories out there that have never been told. So many inventors and famous musicians and dancers and, you know, so many people in the world, scientists and all kinds of things, you've never heard of them. You don't know anything about them.
Dr. Philip Dembo is the author of The Real Purpose of Parenting.
For parents today, it is so much about the outcome of success that if you ask a 15-year-old kid or a 10-year-old kid today if he would rather play ball or play on a winning team, he would say, I'm not playing unless I'm playing on a winning team. So what's happening is we are getting some really high performers, but they are not fully developed people because they can't accept mistakes, they can't accept failures, and they're losing a sense of a full experience. It's really kind of healthy to fail.
Stuart Nallman is on with another edition of Book Banter.
This is Stuart Nallman saying that Book Banter will star Diane Keaton and her memoir, Then Again, Not Lottie Doff, and a couple of other books about the movies that featured Diane Keaton. All that next on View in the Stuff File Program.
And we have lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later, the person who told you this was show number 0129, was Kristen Jerome from 9 to 5 The Beat. She's on the Weekend Breakfast Show and a few overnights, which fuels her Starbucks addiction, by the way, and allows her to bond with the city's unsung heroes who also work off-peak hours. I know a little something about that. You know, nurses, cab drivers, doctors, doormen, public works guys, and police. You know, she's even been offered a free tattoo. I don't know if she took it, though. Anyway, thank you very much, Kristen, for doing the slate on this edition of the Stuff File Program. And I want to get to the stuff in just a matter of moment, but I just want to mention that, of course, Stuff File Program is now heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. Stitcher is a free news and talk mobile app available for your smartphone, and you have a chance to win some money. I just mentioned this right now. When you download Stitcher to hear the Stuff File Program, you have a chance to win bucks. Downloading is quick and easy. Just find Stitcher in the App Store. Download it. It's free and just takes a few seconds. Then, during registration, hit the promo code box and enter Stuff File. That's STUPHFILE, Stuff File, and get automatically entered to win $100. The latest episode of the show will be waiting for you in your favorites. You'll get access to lots of other amazing shows, too, always available to you on demand, no syncing. It's Stitcher Smart Radio, so don't forget to enter the promo code STUFFFILE when you register for Stitcher. Okay, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? Well, regular listeners of the show will be fully familiar with this and fully aware of the fact that I often rally against stories of political correctness gone mad. And here's the latest example of that. In Hercules, California, one dad was incensed after a game of tag on the school playground resulted in his 6-year-old son of being accused of sexual assault, a decision he said was an overreaction by school officials. The parent, who asked only to be identified as Oswin, said his son was accused of brushing his best friend's leg or groin while the two were playing on the playground at Lupine Hills Elementary. Oswin says his son was kept in the principal's office for 2 hours. Again, he's 6, until he confessed. He was suspended and a sexual battery charge was placed on his permanent school record. Now, that's indeed odd, as legally there's no such thing as sexual assault for a 6-year-old in California. It wasn't until Oswin and his wife got a lawyer that the school backed off. District officials declined to discuss specifics. They did confirm that an investigation was conducted and that the child could not be charged with sexual battery, so the claim was removed from the boy's record. Oswin also moved his son to another school, hopefully one where those in charge have at least an iota of common sense. Anyway, moving right along, turns out quite a few people are interested in the job of brothel inspector in Australia. The Lionswood Investigations and Forensic Group in Sydney placed an ad for a brothel buster investigator in My Career magazine, and the job requires, quote, partaking of sexual services, unquote, undercover. Applicants are required to be unmarried and preferably single, willing to have protected sex with prostitutes, and to provide sworn evidence in court. Lionswood Operation Manager Lachlan Jarvis said the job involved visiting suspected illegal brothels and gathering evidence to prove that they were offering sexual services. Jarvis said, "We had dozens apply. It was certainly a popular job." Incidentally, the job pays $64,000 a year. Wow, $64,000 a year to have sex. Isn't that the very definition of prostitution? Just asking. Okay, if you're just too busy to be bothered with the trouble of figuring out a name for your new baby, now you can just let Facebook do it. Dave and Lindsay Meske of Crystal Lake, Illinois, launched a Facebook survey to help them break the deadlock they'd reached over what to name their forthcoming second daughter. David liked Madeline with a Y, and Lindsay favored McKenna. Turns out Madeline won on Facebook, so that's what they named their 7-pound, 14-ounce daughter when she was born. Selfish Daddy Dave said, "That's my favorite. I'm very happy about it." In all, more than 4,200 people from around the world cast votes for the baby's name. Loser Lindsay, who had lobbied her friends and family to vote for McKenna, was at least a good sport about it and said, "I'm really okay with it." Dave noted that the couple will probably wait a while to tell their little girl how she was named. Maybe when she's a junior in high school and understands technology a little bit, said Dave, adding, "With my luck, that might be when she's in kindergarten." Seriously? I mean, it's now a worldwide pop culture story. Do you really think you're going to keep this story from her, especially when clearly every person you know is aware of it? Yeah. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest with me, Peter Anthony Holder, when police were called to the Hillside Tavern in Metal Township, Pennsylvania, on a report of vandalism in the parking lot, they found a car in a disheveled state. Its hood was up, hoses were disconnected, windows cracked, a seat had blood on it. It was also discovered that the gas cap was removed and tampons were used to possibly ignite the gas tank, according to court documents. More tampons were found at the oil cap. Patricia DeShong, age 25, and Quentin DeShong, age 22, were charged with attempted arson, criminal mischief, and public drunkenness. Okay, admit it. You've never heard of such a creative use of tampons, have you? Not even on MacGyver. Yeah. Anyway, on to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Actress Tanya Lee Williams has played the role of Dr. Olivia Winters for the last 22 years on the hit CBS soap The Young and the Restless. She was recently here in Montreal to accept this year's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Award that was given out by the Black Theater Workshop at their annual Vision Gala, which took place a couple of weeks ago. Now, that weekend, I had a chance to chat with Tanya, talking about her career and also the challenges that black artists face. We spoke at the Holiday Inn Hotel in downtown Montreal, where I recorded the interview for television in my other role as an anchor for Global News Montreal. Here is part of that interview now. You've been at this for a long time. You've been on The Young and the Restless for 22 years, seen on CBS and Global. How important is it, as far as you're concerned, to be a role model? Because I know you've talked about these type of things. You've started film festivals. You've done other work to get people of color recognized and noticed. How important is it you to be a role model?
I actually think it's impossible to be a person of color and not think that you're a role model every single day, every moment, all the time. It doesn't matter if you are in a camera, or if you're a police officer, or if you're the postman. You are reflective of your whole race, whether you like it or not. It's not an option. So I've always had a knowledge of that ever since I was a little kid, and I think of my choices and I think of the things that I do, not just for me, Tanya, and what I would do, but I'm constantly thinking about how does that help my community, and I know that everyone's watching and they're judging my whole community by my actions, and that's always meant a lot to me, and I was raised with that concept from my parents as a kid. I've talked to people who go, that's not fair, and you're right, it's not fair, but it's just the way it is. I work very little on what's fair or what's not fair. I work a lot more from this is what is reality.
Were you cognizant of that at the very beginning?
Yeah, I think as a very young child, because you'd have to go back and think of my parents. My father was a lawyer at the time. He ended up being a Supreme Court justice. My mother was a registered nurse, and she did a lot of help, especially when she finished her registered nursery. She went back to Jamaica and helped a lot with people building their, you know, families and children and learning, teaching women how to handle their babies and all those things. So I think my parents understood that they were raising a child to be someone who could embrace their community and understand the community and be an attribute to the community. So that's always been on me since I was a young person, that when I stepped out of the house and how I spoke or presented myself and the things that I do reflected not just on my family, but it reflected on the whole community.
This year, speaking of people of color, this year in the Academy Awards, there are a couple of actresses who are nominated for Oscars for
right.
their roles in the movie The Help.
Yeah.
The other side of that coin is it's a film that deals with segregation, and the characters are both maids.
Yeah.
Do you think we've come a long way as far as that's concerned?
Well, we've come a long way in terms of they're getting nominated for Oscars. Because we haven't come a long way about the kind of stories that people get excited about. I think if you're black, it's hard to get excited about the many, many stories that keep getting recognition are usually stories about people being slaves or people being domestics. Those are usually 99% of the movies that the rest of the world gets excited about. I think it just seems like a broken record to us. Well, especially if you're a person who's black, you know there's so many amazing stories out there that have never been told. So many inventors and famous musicians and dancers and, you know, so many people in the world, scientists and all kinds of things, you've never heard of them, you don't know anything about them. Hannibal, how he was such a famous, he went to Russia, he was one of, you know, a famous general in the armies, none of these stories are ever told. The story you hear all the time is slaves going to the U.S. and how they conquered and domestics and the civil rights, you know, movement. And I think, yes, there are important stories, but it would be nice if there was a little bit of balance. There's also stories, here we are in Montreal, there's amazing stories of the community of from Haiti to Martinique to all the people who have come here and the contributions they've made to Montreal, and never see those stories, they never get recognized. Someone was saying to me just recently, well, you know, we have writers who are black and directors who are black, for instance, why don't they tell these stories? But I say the gatekeepers who hold the key, the financiers and the broadcasters and the people, won't necessarily finance those kind of stories, even if people write them and want to direct them. So you still see them always coming back to the tried and true stories. And this only proves it once again. So the more these stories that are stereotypical and repetitive keep winning the awards, the more we'll keep making the same story again and again.
You talk about the gatekeepers. Somebody as powerful as George Lucas
right.
has a problem getting a movie made called Red Tail,
yes.
that he has to finance himself because it deals with the Tuskegee Airmen of World War II.
Yes.
What does that say about Hollywood, that George Lucas
yeah.
can't get this story made unless he spends his own dime?
I think it sends a really great message. The people we think are the gatekeepers are not the gatekeepers. George Lucas is not a gatekeeper. James Cameron's not a gatekeeper. They're the people that you hear about. The gatekeepers you don't know, actually. The gatekeepers are names you don't know and you've never heard of, and they say the yay or nay. In fact, there was a great documentary on about people who rate the movies, whether they should be, you know, X-rated or whatever. It's literally like less than 12 people who no one's ever heard of, and they've been the same 12 people forever, and no one knows where they are or how they do it, and they... So people in power are the people that you never know who they are or where they are, and the biggest names still have to fight through those gatekeepers to get the things that they want made.
What about yourself? You work as a producer as well. You like to do your own thing. How difficult is it for you to get your vision across?
I think it's I find it impossible, you know. And if I were in my 20s still, it's a battle that I might still want to fight. As you get older, I'm 53 now, I don't have the same fight to want to spend that much of my energy just to keep banging my head against the wall. In particular, I won't talk about the United States because it's a different feel than how it is in Canada. In Canada, I find a lot of producers are making content, they can't make a living. I mean, they're always being told there's no money, and wait till you're trying to make a product that is of diversity. There's really no money, and you will spend years committing yourself to a project of which, and I'm not talking making no money meaning a little money. I'm like making no money and taking money out of your own pocket to make it happen. And at the end of the day, not getting any money back from it. George Lucas can make a movie like this, but he's probably at least set up a plan where he's actually going to make his money back. That is a really difficult scenario to see happening here in Canada. So it's not that I'm saying for people not to do it. I'm just saying it's way more challenging than we think. Television is getting harder and harder every day because less and less drama and fiction programming is happening on it. More and more reality or lifestyle or interview shows are happening, which not to say it's good or bad. It's just hard to tell these stories that we want to tell when there's less and less airtime. And people talk about online and how wonderful online will be, but how does the audience find the thousands of content online that exists? So these are a lot of obstacles and challenges that I take my hat off to the young people. They better work out and get their energy up because it's going to be a struggle.
You mentioned something that you rarely hear an actress mention. You mentioned your age a little while ago.
Yeah, I talk about my age all the time, and one of the reasons I do is I feel it's hard to be taken seriously when people think you're younger than you are. So I actually, my friends say I have this habit, I actually add a year to my age. So it's just, I've looked forward to being 50 for a really long time. I've looked forward to it since I was in my 20s. Because to me, by the time you reach your 50s, you now really have something to say. I've lived a life. I have experience. I have gone through all kinds of things. And I now no longer feel I have to prove anything. And more importantly, when someone's younger trying to tell me something, I like to say, that's not the way it really happened. And I know because I was there and I lived it, and it was my experience. So I think we're the most powerful in our 50s and 60s to make real change. And it's sad to see that a lot of television and film has counted out the baby boomer age as not relevant because, first of all, we're more relevant because of the age we are, but we're really relevant because of the numbers we are. This particular generation is going to be the large group, and it would be interesting to see television and to see film respect the fact that that's the audience. As they see television audiences dwindling, they're dwindling because a lot of people in my age group can't find anything decent to watch on TV because it's geared to such a younger audience, and that younger audience is actually a smaller audience than we are.
Well, the problem that actresses have too is that there's not a lot of roles, or people don't consider a lot of roles for older actresses. Is this a problem you're finding personally?
No, I actually think it's changed. I think there are more significant roles for older actors. I mean, Betty White just got honored for her 90th birthday. She's 90 years old. When I think of the Maggie Smiths and I think of the Shirley MacLaines, there's so many actors. Diane Keaton, I mean, these are weighty actors. They've worked consistently. They continue to work. Who was it? Meryl Streep said she's worked more now than she's ever worked in her life. She said when she did the movie It's Complicated, she goes, never in her wildest dreams did she think she would be 60, in her 60s, with her love interest being a few years younger than her, and being the lead in that kind of movie. It's because this audience is very different. I mean, 50s now is a little bit different. You know, life has been a little bit easier. Technology has made life a little bit easier for us. We're not as worn out and exhausted as we were. And these are the more relevant stories. I don't really see stories about teenagers and early 20s as relevant anymore. So I think it's very different. I think if you even look back in film and television 20 and 30 years ago, you would never have seen actresses in their 50s and 60s and 70s with ripe roles like you see them now. So I think it's very different. I feel very blessed. In fact, when I go to auditions, the most annoying thing is for me to go for a part in my 50s and for them to go, I don't think she looks whatever. I'm like, yes, this is what 50-year-olds look like now. And we should embrace that and honor that and know that there's nothing weird or uncomfortable. Aging is a process of life. And dying is a process of life. You know what? I'd actually like to see more movies about dying and about the process of dying. We seem to have a real fear about aging, and we seem to have a real fear about dying. And I don't understand why, because it's all part of it. It's an exciting process of life.
Is there anything in your career you haven't had a chance to do that you'd like to?
It's hard for me to ever look back, because it's just not in my nature. So I only look forward. I actually want to do a lot more faith-based and Christian-type programming and films and TV, those kind of things. What's funny is when I started my career, what we now call Christian and faith-based was just regular. It was regular television, you know, 40 years ago or something like that. So I'd like to go back to that time. I long for when I watched shows like Julia, or when I watch the Brady Bunch, or when I watch the Sunday Night Disney, you know, channel. I long for that kind of programming, and I'd love to be a part of being a part of that kind of programming. Sometimes I watch TV, I'm terrified, I get scared. I mean, I watch TV shows, I'm like, oh my God. I mean, there's so many cops shows and, you know, shows about psycho killers and people being mutilated and how there's just so much of that I really don't want to watch. I don't want to see dead bodies being pulled apart to find out who the serial killer or murderer or rapist or whatever is. I know it's out there. I don't think we need to be reminded in every single show that there's cruel, horrible people out there. I'd also like to be reminded that there are wonderful families and great kids and a little bit of joy and happiness. Whatever happened to a good old movie with a dog, you know? It's just without the dog being murdered or something.
Well, one last question I want to ask. I know you don't like to look back, but if you had the opportunity, hypothetical question,
right,
to talk to a younger you,
right,
as a mentor, what would you tell the young Tanya Lee Williams, who's just getting into the business?
So getting into the business then as opposed to getting into the business now?
Getting into the business right now.
If I were young getting into the business right now,
yeah.
It's a very different business. And when I talk to young people now, as I would talk to myself if I were young now, I would say, you have to be very specific about what it is you want to be in it. When I started out in the business, you could just be an actor. You could just wait for the phone to ring and hope your agent sent you out. That's not the way the business is now. You're going to have to be a creator. You're going to have to understand every bit of the business. You're going to have to understand sales and box office and, you know, sort of things that I never thought about 35 years ago. You're just going to have to know them now. And so I would rethink it. I'm not sure I would go in the business if I were a young person now. I think it's great for people who want it, because the kind of business I wanted to be in 35 years ago was a different, that what excited me was it was a different kind of business. The way it is right now, I could think of more interesting things I would do with my life than be in the entertainment industry right now.
What would they be?
I would love to work in sort of a sociological or philosophical or psychological way in third world countries. I think I find smaller communities and third world country kind of communities, their value systems and the morality, and I find that very interesting, and I would love to do some sort of work within those organizations. I'm already been raised in first world countries, and I live in, but I, even though I live in Los Angeles and I spend a lot of time in Toronto, my friends feel like I'm like country at heart. And New Mexico is actually where my getaway place is, and I live in a town with 2,000, you know, people where people have their own water wells and wind generators, and I feel more at home and more comfortable in that kind of community.
Tanya, I thank you very much for taking the time to talk with us.
Thank you.
And congratulations on getting the Martin Luther King Award.
Thank you very much.
Actress Tanya Lee Williams. That was an interview we recorded a couple of weeks ago for television while she was in town to receive this year's Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Award from Black Theater Workshop. If you would like to see the interview, you can go to the Global Montreal website. You can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0129, and you'll find links to Global's website and also links to Tanya's site as well.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. If you know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands, just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's radio that puts a smile on your face and a skip in your step. Please avoid skipping if you are driving.
And still to come on The Stuff File program, now heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio, we'll talk about parenting, and also there's another edition of Book Banter with Stuart Nallman and, of course, an idiot of the day. But right now, more Stuff File news for your listening pleasure. North Carolina police arrested 41-year-old Jimmy Albert Burleson after a 15-hour standoff with cops that included an exchange of gunfire, tear gas volleys, and a communications robot. Oh, and we might mention Jimmy was naked the whole time. A neighbor called police after spotting Burleson sitting naked on his porch in Greensboro while waving a gun and calling out to God. The responding officer got an unpleasant surprise when Burleson allegedly started shooting an automatic weapon at him, possibly an AK-47. The officer took cover and returned fire until Burleson retreated back inside and barricaded himself in. Soon, dozens of officers were on hand shooting tear gas inside and even deploying a robot with audio and video capabilities that would help officers talk to Burleson. The first robot broke down, but an officer using a second robot was able to coax our man out of the house long enough for police to subdue him at around 8 p.m. He was arrested on charges of attempted first-degree murder and assault with a deadly weapon on an officer. Police will stay with him at the hospital until he finishes a thorough checkup from the neck up. And why are the crazy ones always naked? Yeah. Moving right along, nobody really likes to think about the way they might want to die, but it's safe to say most of us would not choose choking on our own dentures during sex with a 62-year-old prostitute. That's exactly what happened to a 74-year-old man identified only as Chen in Taiwan. The prostitute in question said she had sex with Chen for about 30 minutes when he got up from the bed, paid her, and then suddenly collapsed. She said he fell back onto the bed, his eyes were open, but he wasn't moving, although I shook his body and tried to wake him up. She then called for help, and Chen was rushed to the hospital, where he was pronounced dead on arrival. Doctors later found his dentures stuck in his throat. If that's not an ad for Polygrip, I don't know what is. I can just see it now. Hey, you don't want this to happen to you, do you? Get Polygrip today. And here's another story where dentures leads to trouble. In Waynesburg, Pennsylvania, a 49-year-old toothless woman has been arrested for allegedly robbing a bank. She told police she did it because she needed money to buy false teeth. The entire incident was captured on surveillance video. Waynesburg police officer Tom Ankrum said during her confession, she stated she wanted to use the money to pay for dentures she was unable to get through welfare until next year. She allegedly handed the cashier a note asking for a specific amount of cash. The note also said she had a gun and warned the teller not to call police. Ironically, one of the bank employees recognized the robber as someone from her church and gave police her name, leading to her arrest. Well, at least she's a good Christian criminal. And a Croatian hospital has an interesting new piece of art hanging at their facility. They've framed and mounted an unusual selection of objects that have been removed from patients' bodies over the last 80 years. The collection includes needles, buttons, coins, animal bones, and even a metal communist red star. Doctors decided to limit the display to items that were swallowed by patients rather than objects that found other ways into the body. There is a separate collection of items patients asked to have surgically removed after they claimed they accidentally sat on them. That collection includes TV remotes, salt and pepper shakers, cans of deodorant, and various adult toys. A hospital spokesperson said, "We started collecting things in the 1930s to show medical students the sort of thing to look for in cases like this." Yeah. Accidentally sat on them? Really? That's right up there with the black eye defense of I tripped and hit a doorknob. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News with me, Peter Anthony Holder, before we get to our next guest. In Bennington, Vermont, in December, Adam Hall, age 34, was accused of vandalizing his ex-girlfriend's car, including scratching the word slut into the hood. Except that word was spelt wrong. It was spelt S-U-L-T. Salt, whatever that means. Hall initially denied any involvement until an officer handed him a sheet of paper and asked him to write the sentence, "You are a slut." Sure enough, Hall spelt slut, S-U-L-T, and was promptly charged with malicious mischief. Yes. What was that thing we were all told when we were kids? Reading is fundamental? Classic case right there. Anyway, on to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Dr. Philip Dembo is a life coach and relationship expert. He is the author of The Real Purpose of Parenting, the book you wish your parents read. He joins us on the line right now. Hi, Philip.
Hi, Peter. How are you today?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks for being on the program with us. I want to start right off by asking about the title of the book, and in two parts. First of all, by calling the book The Real Purpose of Parenting, are you going on the assumption that most people have the wrong idea of what parenting really means or is?
Absolutely. You know, one of the reasons I wrote the book is I've been very, very concerned in how parenting and our attitudes in our society has really affected the lack of conscience in young people today. And I really think that we have begun to overparent our kids to the point where we really need to take a look at what's the real purpose of parenting, and so that we get back to understanding our role so we can let our children grow up to feel all the feelings they need to feel and develop a conscience for themselves.
You know, birds often push their little ones out of the nest. Some of them do hit the ground, but they push them out of the nest. As opposed to nowadays, as it seems you're describing, parents seem to hover over their children way too much. Where did it go wrong?
Well, you know, it's an interesting concept. If you look back in history, about 1950s, when Dr. Benjamin Spock had this amazing idea that nobody really thought about, and that is how to develop the self-esteem of children. And what he said was, is that kids need to be praised for their positive behaviors and their positive experiences. Well, back then, you know, we did that, and it wasn't about everything. Today, as society has morphed forward at 180 miles an hour, we are now at a place where success is the only outcome that parents tolerate, and failure and mistakes are sort of condemnable. So what happens is, to build self-esteem, children have to succeed. It's you know, your metaphor is a great metaphor, because it's not about the bird that flies. It's about the bird that falls out of that nest. And the truth of the matter is that kids make mistakes and kids fail. But for parents today, it is so much about the outcome of success that if you ask a 15-year-old kid or a 10-year-old kid today if he would rather play ball or play on a winning team, he would say, I'm not playing unless I'm playing on a winning team. So what's happening is, we are getting some really high performers, but they are not fully developed people, because they can't accept mistakes, they can't accept failures, and they're losing a sense of a full experience. It's really kind of healthy to fail, because it gives us that ability to learn and to be humble and to own our own mistakes, and we're not doing that in parenting anymore.
And yet, you say we're doing a bad job nowadays as compared to before, yet the second half of your title is The Book You Wish Your Parents Read. So what are you saying about our parents?
Well, what I'm saying is that for the last 50, 60 years, we have allowed this to go on. You know, my parents, your parents possibly, parents of the generation prior, have really focused so much on getting us to where everybody else, quote-unquote, everybody else is, that we have lost sight of a lot of this. We are three or two generations away. I'm not saying that people did it great before. What I'm saying is, what they did before well, we have lost sight of. I do believe that we need to help kids with all the complicated things that are going on in life. But I wish parents read from the generations prior my book, or had an understanding, or had a dialogue of, yes, let's help kids feel positive about their positive behaviors. Let's develop self-esteem, but not at the cost of helping them learn that to be a complete person is to keep other people on their radar, have empathy, have compassion, really understand that their behaviors will affect other people, and their behaviors, when they make mistakes, are okay. You know, when a little kid hits that ball off the tee and it goes over everybody's head, you could see it in the eyes of parents today, that all of a sudden they think they have the next Alex Rodriguez or the next Albert Pujols, rather than just let it be what it is. We're making things too large and we're making things too small. We just have to let them be what they are and let the experience be what we applaud. Now, parents haven't done that since pre-World War II, since really pre-Dr. Spock. He had a great idea. It is the foundation of much of the parenting that we've done, but it has a fatal flaw in it, and that is, there is no room for mistakes.
Now, you talk about the generational shift and how people parent today as opposed to their parents or maybe even their grandparents. Do you think, right or wrong, good, bad, or indifferent, people just generally tend to do, to a certain degree, the opposite of how they were raised, trying to correct whatever perceived mistakes may have been done with their own childhood?
Well, you know, it's interesting, because I think you have a segment of the population who would say that, but I think more what you have are people who say, you know, this was good enough for me, it's good enough for my kid. I got spanked, my kid could get spanked. My dad never bought me a car, I'm not buying my kid a car. So I think in a lot of ways we have that intention to try to do it opposite of our parents, but in many ways we become our parents in how we truly operate. You know, one of the things that's so important today to understand, with a world that's going this fast, with the internet, with everything that a kid is being raised with out there today, is that unlike any other generation, children today, we have no precedent for what they're going through. We have no precedent for the level of violence that they see that comes into their computer screen, the level of sexuality that they find. There are no boundaries to that for them today, that we don't have that precedent. And if we don't have a safe environment in the house where children could say what they need to say and parents don't try to script them fully into who they think they should be, you know, kids aren't going to have a place where they can try to figure all of this out. We never had to figure all of this out. This is brand new territory, and being a parent of young kids today is very, very frightening because it's only going to get more and more complicated.
Is part of the problem we folks in the media, I mean, nowadays, you talk about being safer. Is the world really not as safe as it used to be, or is it just that we've gotten better at disseminating the information here, there, and everywhere, and therefore we've made it unsafe by telling literally every story?
Well, I think that's right. I think if you look at the stories that are out there today, the stories of Penn State and Syracuse basketball team, Penn State football program, Mr. Sandusky and all of that, the people were really talking about, these things happen 10, 20 years ago. You know, the unsafety has been there. There's a different level of unsafety, of course, by a different access to our children through predators on the internet and other ways to reach our children. But the unsafety is there. We are just sort of micromanaging it now and exposing it, which is creating a real high level of anxiety in families today.
The book is called The Real Purpose of Parenting, the book you wish your parents read. It's written by Dr. Philip Dembo, and I understand people can go to your website, which is coachinglifestrategies.com. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
I thank you very, very much for taking the time to be on the program with us.
You know what? I thank you. You are great. This was a great conversation. Peter Anthony Holder, you're really great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the compliment. That was Dr. Philip Dembo, author of The Real Purpose of Parenting, the book you wish your parents read. You can visit my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0129, and you'll find links to Philip's site, plus links to either Amazon.com or Amazon.ca, where you can order his book directly. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob DiRigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Have you read any good email disclaimers lately? You know the ones. They're at the end of many email notes, even the ones you might get from your best friends. They warn you what could happen if you get an email note that they intended for someone else. What should you make of these? Could you really be sued if you find yourself on the wrong end of an email note? The Wall Street Journal recently wondered the same thing, and it published a front-page article about it. The bottom line is, even lawyers don't know the answer. Some think these disclaimers have value, but others think they're totally unenforceable. Let's be fair, in lawsuit-happy America, we'll probably keep seeing more and more of these electronic disclaimers. But whether anyone reads them is another matter. Some experts have started putting hilarious, tongue-in-cheek notes at the end of their disclaimers to see if anyone notices. Not surprisingly, they report that few people do. To read the funniest email disclaimer I've ever seen, visit our website at centerforamerica.org.
From our studios in Montreal, Canada, and going out to the rest of the world, this is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. It's time to crack a spine. The Stuff File presents Book Banter with Stuart Nolman. Once again, here's Peter Anthony Holder.
And Stuart Nolman is indeed with us once again for another edition of Book Banter. Hello, Stu.
La-dee-da. Peter, how's it going?
La-dee-da?
Yeah, have you ever seen Annie Hall?
Oh, I was about to. I was thinking further back. I was thinking Gone with the Wind.
No, but I am going to Atlanta very soon. So yeah, there is sort of a connection there somehow.
Ah, okay.
But we're not talking about Vivian Leigh on this edition of Book Banter. We're talking about Diane Keaton, and her new book. Now, I recently watched Woody Allen's classic 1977 Oscar-winning classic, Annie Hall, and at the surface, when you see it, and it's a great movie, it gives his fans a glimpse into Allen's Brooklyn upbringing and his rising show business career. It's, you know, semi-autobiographical. However, the movie also acted as a sort of autobiography of the actress who played the title role, and that's Diane Keaton. And that all came to light after I read her recently published memoir called Then Again. She was born Diane Hall in California, the oldest daughter of Dorothy D. Ann Keaton and Jack Hall, who was an engineer who later created a successful financial business. And the book, actually, she gives the reader a brutally honest approach to her life and career and all the insecurities that went along with it. Like, first of all, her early successes on Broadway with – she was an original cast of Hair, actually – and in the stage version of Play It Again, Sam, her inability to find acting jobs between the stage successes. In fact, she did a lot of deodorant commercials on TV. Her inability to find an apartment after moving to from California to New York, and you know, how New York could be a tough town. Also, her debilitating eating disorders that was very destructive at one point. Her reticence to become part of the Hollywood establishment, which is exemplified by a rather unconventional wardrobe choice that she wore at the 1977 Oscars, where she won the Best Actress Award for Annie Hall, and her relationships with Woody Allen, Warren Beatty, and Al Pacino. And about the latter, she admitted in the book, and this is, I quote, "The first thing I noticed about Al was his nose. It was long, like a cucumber."
Okay.
How about his method acting? Well, I don't know about that. However, Then Again is also a parallel memoir. Keaton uses excerpts from her mother's 85 volumes of personal journals, which she allows her to tell her story of how she raised her family and her personal characteristics that she outlined throughout the thousands of pages where she chronicles her life and that of her children. And Keaton uses these entries as a means of inspiration of how she should run her own life and to find personal and professional happiness, not only as an actress, but as a producer, writer, and mother of two children.
And by the way, 85 journals, that could be considered a psychosis.
Well, maybe it was, actually. Although, you know, Diane's brother did actually go into an analysis, so he had some psychological problems. So maybe you got a point there, Peter. And it also was a means of spiritually bonding with her mother as well. But Diane Keaton has created an interesting, crazy cult of a memoir with Then Again. And through personal reflections, letters, journal entries, poems, and scrapbook photos, we get to see, 3 or 5 years after the fact, that Diane Keaton and Annie Hall were indeed fascinatingly and coincidentally one and the same person.
Wow. And by the way, speaking of mothers, Hollywood mothers who kept journals, I believe Rob Lowe's mother kept journals too.
And we expect that to be published eventually.
And no, she also had some serious issues. And if you read Rob Lowe's book, which is excellent.
Oh, yeah?
You'll learn a little bit about that in Rob's book, which just came out, late last year.
That's right. And just got re-released in paperback, too.
Yes.
But if you want to read a little bit about Diane Keaton, there's a couple of books about the movies with Diane Keaton. First of all, Try Conversations with Woody Allen by Eric Lax, who is Woody Allen's biographer. A great series of interviews about Woody Allen, the man and the movies, and behind the scenes of how he put together all of his great movies. And also about his co-stars, too. So there's some interesting passages about Diane Keaton. Nothing controversial, but, you know, a good appreciation of Diane Keaton. Also about The Godfather. She was in all three movies. Try The Annotated Godfather. It's the actual screenplay, but with production notes, trivia, deleted scenes, behind-the-scenes photos, and a great little piece of interest about Diane Keaton about in this book is that she was not the first choice to play Kay Adams. It was Genevieve Bujold, it was Susan Blakely, it was actually Jill Clayburgh was in consideration. But what stood Diane Keaton out, she made Kay Adams not such a bland character. In fact, Coppola called her a kooky actress.
Hmm.
How do you like that? Now, remember we used to, in the last couple of book banters, we were talking about Bing Crosby?
Yes.
6 Degrees of Bing, which I'll have, you know, not with every segment, but, you know, as many as I can. But I found one for this one.
Uh-oh.
You seen the first Godfather?
Yes.
You know the scene where Kay and Michael pass by the newsstand when they find out about Don Corleone got shot?
Yes.
It was in front of also Radio City Music Hall.
Uh-huh.
The movie that was playing, The Bells of St. Mary, starring Bing Crosby.
Oh, 6 Degrees of Bing. There we are again. Okay, so the book is?
Then Again by Diane Keaton. It's published by Random House, and it's $29.99.
And how can people find you, sir? Or do they have to look up Bing?
Not yet, but Don't give me any ideas. It could be a good Facebook page one day.
But wait a minute. Can they find you on Bing?
Well, I don't know yet, but ask the Crosby family. But you can find me before that. You can find me on the West End Times every week in print or online at www.westendtimes.ca.
Thank you very much, Stu.
You're welcome, Peter.
Stuart Nauman with another edition of Book Banter here with me, Peter Anthony Holder, on the Stuff File program.
The Stuff File.
And we're almost done with this edition of the Stuff File program. We still have an idiot of the day to get to and a couple of Stuff File stories before we wrap things up. Okay, you're never going to find a more bizarre headline than this one that was in the Daily Telegraph last week. The headline is, Gordon Ramsay's dwarf porn double found dead in a badger's den in Wales. I can't make that up. Okay, now that I've shared the headline, I have to share the story. Dwarf porn star Percy Foster, who was also Gordon Ramsay's double, has been found dead in the most bizarre of circumstances. Percy Foster's 3'6" body was discovered partially eaten in a badger's den in Wales. The report says the 35-year-old was found deep in an underground chamber by Ministry of Agriculture experts ahead of a planned badger gassing program. And that alone is weird enough. Investigators have not ruled out the possibility of suicide, according to the report. Adult film producer Dexter Yamanka says Percy was a little guy with big problems. He was doing well, but was under pressure like everyone else in this industry. And I clean that line up a little bit because he had some expletives along the way. But anyway, in a recent interview, Foster, star of the X-rated movie Hi-Ho, Hi-Ho, It's Up Your Arse We Go, spoke of his excitement about his growing career as Ramsay's double. Here's a quote. Porn lookalikes get more money than normal actors. Dwarf lookalikes are rare as hen's teeth, and so they can command top dollar. I've already ordered a new BMW and a diamond-encrusted soda stream. Yeah. There's so many things I could add to the end of that story. But none of them are even remotely politically correct, so I'll just move along. Anquin St. Junius, age 32, can scarcely walk and can only feed himself with a special lightweight spoon. This is what his attorney says. The La Crosse, Wisconsin man is accused of stabbing a bartender before he was badly beaten himself. But although St. Junius sat motionless in a wheelchair in the courtroom, Judge Scott Horn concluded the defendant was less disabled than dishonest. A surveillance video shows that while awaiting his court hearing, St. Junius was doing push-ups in jail. So instead of releasing him over his supposedly poor medical condition, as his attorney had requested, the judge doubled his bond. St. Junius left the courtroom humiliated, a reporter noted. Advice to his lawyer. Check for video cameras at the crime scene before arguing his innocence at trial. Just a good idea. You know, I almost made that guy, or maybe even his lawyer, the idiot of the day, but I didn't. Because this is the idiot of the day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the idiot of the day.
Possibly the dumbest criminal we've heard of in a long time was found in Lynn, Massachusetts. Either that or it's just proof that crack don't smoke itself. Authorities say Tina Caffarelli bought $64 worth of soda using a stolen welfare benefits card, then immediately fed the full cans into one of those supermarket automated redemption machines so that she could get the 5 cents deposit. Caffarelli pleaded not guilty to the charges. Police say the electronic benefits card she used to buy 18 12-packs of soda had another person's name on it. The supermarket manager says the full cans of soda also caused extensive damage to the redemption machine. Again, she put full cans into that machine that crushes the cans and gives you a nickel. Yeah. Never mind the stolen welfare benefits card, because that's just dumb on its own. But why would someone put full cans of soda into a redemption machine? One reason, and one reason only, they're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0129. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com. And again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number. And you could email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You could also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder. And don't forget to check out our Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show. On the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, streaming on PCJ Media and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. I'm your announcer, your name here. Oh, I'm sorry. This is Ben Patrick Johnson. What am I being paid for this? What? You're flipping kidding me. Okay, that's it. Turn off the microphone.